Hello and welcome to the Real Lot Awful Movies number 17. We punked you. Oh, yeah. We got you good. You should have seen the looks on your faces. Oh, man, did we get them, Andrew? Oh, it was so good. Okay, anyway, no.
Love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah, we've got an actual Lot Awful Movies here, and it is of a current hit show that I'm so glad to be reviewing. It's fun to review something current, you know, that's on the air still, and we can go back. People are probably watching it. They're familiar with it. It's Ally McBeal, a show that Andrew thinks is currently happening right now. And no one tell him otherwise.
Yeah, this is probably the second most requested, right? Like, I mean, you know, we obviously we're never doing My Cousin Vinny again. Well, we've done My Cousin Vinny, right? We can now say, we've done it. So now we're gonna do that. The single largest pop culture reference from the show. We're gonna do the pilot episode of Ally McBeal, and I need to give a shout out. Completely unrelated to this, the day after Thomas and I decided we were going to do the Ally McBeal pilot for this month's Lot Awful Movies, after, you know, the fake April Fool's joke and everything, the Bygones podcast, it's at Bygones podcast, started following us on Twitter, and the Bygones podcast is the Ally McBeal rewatch podcast.
Oh, really?
So
that's awesome.
Yeah, one of our listeners made a joke because we made an Ally McBeal joke, and then they started following us. So welcome on board, Bygones podcast. So there we go.
Yeah, well, okay, so Ally McBeal, I had never seen this show. Now, I think this was on Fox, I'm pretty sure, and I would see previews for it all the time, because, you know, there was a lot of great Fox shows back in this time, you know, there's...
Yeah, Herman's Head. Herman's Head was great.
Herman's Head, what the hell is that? Is that from the 80s or something?
No, it's from exactly this time. It was only ever on for one season.
Oh, okay.
And it was, do you remember, gosh, they just made a cartoon version of it recently that was like a Pixar movie that was all right inside the main character's head and the different
animated. You mean that amazing movie?
Yeah, that movie Inside Out is 100% just a revised take on Herman's Head, which featured this like nebbish guy who was dating this supermodel type girl, and it would zoom inside his head every time they made a decision. And like
Herman's Head debuted in 1990 fucking one.
Yeah. Ally McBeal is 1997. That's on the same order.
Not even close. I have no memory of this.
Really?
Head.
Really? 6 years? Okay, fine. Yeah. You're gonna go after me for 6 years difference either way.
Well, you said it's around the same time, and
it was
over long before Ally McBeal even happened. I have no memory of whatever this was. However, I am seeing that Hank Azaria was in this show.
It was canceled after a season because I literally think I was the only person that watched it, but it was it was great. It was
well
hilarious.
Let's do that then. I've got good news for you. It's looking like there were three seasons, so you can go.
Ooh.
Yeah, go number seasons three, so 91 through 94. So again, you know,
so there's only 3 years in between Herman's Head and Ally McBeal. 3 years is an eye blink. Come on.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
There
now.
You go.
It's true. Insofar as Ally McBeal is still a current show, this is a contemporary
so
show.
I have to join you and say, for all of the references, I have never seen until now an episode of Ally McBeal.
And what I started that. What I was going to say is I've never seen it. And we've watched this pilot. We watched the first episode. It's on Hulu. You can catch it. And I hate to say it, but I love this show. I actually think this is a really good show. And I'm curious if you're going to hate me for it or if you're going to disagree.
I think two things about the show. Number one, I think it is the most late 90s thing ever.
Yeah.
So I am not at all surprised that you like, I half expected the lawyers to come out with the, like, sideways baseball caps and like baggy jeans and be like, hey, catch those pogs. Like, I mean, it was seriously like way 90s.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's also maybe the strangest show I have ever seen. Strange.
You just described a show called Herman's Head, where some people live in his head and act out his thoughts or something.
Right. This is stranger than that. But the things that it's doing, we're going to talk about it when we break down the show. I kind of get why there's a podcast, like why there are people that are still loving this show today.
Because 70,000 podcasts on every possible topic. Well, there's probably a Herman's Head podcast. You should check it out.
They should have me on as a guest.
Yeah.
All right. Call us, guys. We'll send you some sweet, sweet Stormy Daniels boost.
Oh, man. So the show opens up. Ally McBeal. It is very 90s. It is very 90s. And it's the start of the show is the history of Ally McBeal's kind of romance with this childhood, sweetheart that apparently started when they were kids and went all the way through into college. And it's just their relationship history. There was very sweet, childhood romance.
I'm reluctant, since we had Montage Gate last time, I'm reluctant to call it, because this is definitely a montage.
Yeah,
and there are like 78 scenes in this 40-minute episode that are like scenes set to music. So whether you want to call them montages
I'm with you on this. This is a montage.
This begins with Calista Flockhart, and she's got the ascot tied around her neck, kind of like Dana Perino. It's like, I'm into breath play sort of thing. It's like sitting above this collarbone that is more prominent than the unfrozen caveman lawyer's unibrow. Like that, it you can see every bone in Calista Flockhart's body. And I know we're not going to make like all the tired, like,
yeah,
this spawned at the time all of these anorexia jokes. That's
not cool. But she's a very tiny person. But I like her. I think she's great. And I think that this opens up very oddly.
Really oddly.
Yeah.
It begins with the sentence, this TV show, this pilot for a show that was picked up, was Fox's highest rated show and ran for 5 seasons, began with, it's because I smelled his bottom.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. That was weird. Well, they were kids and they liked each other and they saw dogs doing it, so they did it. That's what it was.
And it lingers a long time. I don't know if you found this a teeny tiny bit uncomfortable, but she's romantically describing her first kiss and the actors on stage are 8. And it's like,
It's sweet. I'll grant you the dog part is weird. Okay, that's weird. But it's sweet. They had a first kiss and it was, she remembers it fondly. Come on.
Heartless anti-romance. I don't know. Yeah. But then
it's not dirty. It's just a little sweet, innocent peck. Come on.
She's describing how he lingered on her lower lip. It was a little, it may be a little bit uncomfortable. Yeah. But
you're just a.
I know.
Yeah. You hate everything good, that's all.
I do. That is true. But what is not good is the soundtrack to this show, which, again, as we pointed out, this is from the era of the worst music ever made. But here's the weird thing about this.
When I hear this music, I think it sounds like the 80s to me. This music is not, you're making this out to be, because you hate all the 90s rock, but this sounds kind of 80s to me. It's a little. I don't know where you're here. Let's play here. That's it. Let's go to the judges. So what happens first, though, is that we go through the story of, what happened to them. They went to school together. They went to law school together. And then Ally McBeal was so good. She was on the Law Review, which you've talked about before. That's something you got to do. So there's some legal accuracy for you. Right?
There's plenty of shockingly legal accurate things here because my hypothesis about this show is that I think this show was pitched to David Kelly, who's written like a billion law shows by people who had jobs at big law firms like Covington and Burlington Coat Factory and quit and then were complaining in a bar about their lives. And like that's because this is absolutely like what you would fantasize about if you worked, if you were a Ivy League law school graduate toiling away in a big law firm, like this wouldn't be the script you would write because you're billing 3,000 hours a year. You don't have any time to write scripts. But this is what you would fantasize that the law would be like, right? A whole bunch of 25-year-olds with their own law firms getting to go argue motions and, you know, oh, man, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
What you're saying is it's fantastic. And then what he transfers to a different school because he couldn't make the law review. And so,
yeah, this is now we got to undercut my previous statement, right?
Okay.
So they're both at Harvard, right? And Calista Flockhart has made law review, and then the love interest, who I have down as young Robert Urich, which you probably won't get that reference at all.
I don't know what that is.
But young Robert Urich is like, I have to get a clerkship, which means I have to be on law review, so I'm going to transfer from Harvard to Michigan, and they're only about like 11 billion things that are wrong with that.
Oh, really? It sounded logical to me. He couldn't hack it here. So he's got to go. Why can't he go to another school and make the law review? Is that not how it works?
So here are the problems, right? So number one,
I love how all of this, by the way, is because I just wanted to get to the part where the music starts, but okay, go. We'll do this.
Yeah,
go
no, ahead. I can't help. Sorry. It. There's not that much law in this show. So if I don't do this, right?
We can't skip it. Yeah, no, I agree.
So number one, he's concerned about getting a clerkship, and like 2/3 of Harvard's classes get clerkships, right? Like it's, you know,
really bad.
Yeah. But if his grades are that bad, then he's not going to be able, right? Michigan is like a top 10 law school, right? It was right around 5 or 6 back at the time when I was in school. So, right, it's not like he left to go to, you know, North Dakota State or something like that. And the biggest problem is schools pick who's on law review after your first year. And so they've completed their first. So even if he transferred into Michigan, right, they've already picked the law review, so you can't like cherry pick and retake it. And you'd be much better off like the next step below law review. We later find out that young Robert Urich has a Supreme Court clerkship anyway. Like if you're that good that you can get a Supreme Court clerkship out of it, then like stick around at Harvard, be on the next tier down, which is the advisory council, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, okay, fine. But it makes sense. For the sake of the plot, he's
for the sake of the plot, it is
there,
required
and
that he move to Michigan.
She is not going to give up her, you know, good situation in Harvard because she's done well. And so she chooses to stay, and they break up.
And I have to point out, because it's a recent flashback, and so this was shot in the like in 1997. We're shot in 1996, mm-hmm. debuted in 1997. So to have it be a couple of years old, they now have Calista Flockhart with like frizzy hair and this acid wash denim jacket that like I would totally rock that jacket right now. Like late 80s, early 90s look. Oh, it's good.
And then finally we can get to this music and we can judge. We can let everyone judge if this is from the if this is more 90s or 80s sounding. Okay, so that sounds 90s. I'll give you that. Oh yeah, she does have the denim jacket.
Mm-hmm. So here I am, the victim of my own choices.
This is very the cat commercial where the here we go. See, this is fucking 80s, man.
No, this is totally that's totally Melissa Etheridge.
Well, I don't know. I mean, okay, we'll let everyone else judge.
Yeah,
we'll set up a poll. Here's the thing. That's not any 90s music I listen to. That's all I'm saying. When I hear the dun, chicka, dun, 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 like that upbeat kind of nonsense like that, it just reminds me of 80s music, but maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. We'll let the listeners decide.
People occasionally were upbeat in the 90s, Thomas.
Nope, like, never happened.
The
90s
team.
Music that you talk about hating is all the grunge stuff that, you know.
Well, that's
so that's
true,
why,
too. Don't get me wrong.
That's what I am taking issue with, is you're lumping this in with like, oh yeah, 90s music sucked, didn't it? And it's like, what? This isn't like the other thing that you said you didn't like. because it's grunge and stuff. But anyway.
And I like this, and I like that more than I like grunge music. I mean, it definitely, but yeah. It reminds me of how much I hate 90s music, so.
All right. Well, we'll leave it to everybody to untangle all that. So
we are definitely going to do a poll because those credits are definitely Melissa Etheridge, late 90s.
Okay. Well, you thought a show Melissa called Herman's Head was right around this time, and that was from 1991. It was. So I think who knows? But I want to point out, though, I do have a note that says this credit sequence feels more 80s than 1997 before we even talked about this. Like I already thought that. It wasn't just a result of us bickering. But anyway.
Well, it has Saved by the Bell colors in it, too. So it's definitely 90s.
We go back to the show, and she's at this firm right out. She's right out of law school, right? Pretty much. I think.
Yeah, I think the timing in this show is really, really hard to figure out because everybody went to law school together. But like one of them turns out to be the senior partner. One is the head litigator and one is Calista Flockhart right out. And we know young Robert Urich had a clerkship, right? That's at least a year.
And he looks like he's 40. So it's hard to tell.
Well, that's why young Robert Urich. So, but
if I knew anything about who that was, I'm sure that would be a good reference.
Our older listeners are dying right now.
There's a great quote from this, and I want to know. See, I think this is a good show. Here's a quote as she's narrating. She says, "Love and law are the same, romantic in theory, but the practice can give you a yeast infection."
I have the same quote written down, but under it, I have written, "These are jokes."
It's so. Great. So we agree. They are great jokes. So then what happens in her firm that she's, again, I guess just starting out as, is Bill Murray's brother, Brian Doyle Murray, sexually harasses her. And it's very, very appropriate for right now. It's a Me Too moment happening in the show. What's up?
Is that Brian Doyle Murray?
Sorry. It's the guy.
It's
I'm
the
mixing
jump
it up.
To conclusions.
Yeah, it's the jump to conclusions, Matt guy. Yeah, no, I mixed it up. It's the guy from Office Space. You're right. They look a little similar. And for a second, I thought it was him. It's the jump to conclusions, Matt guy. Another great. Those are both two great actors. Brian Doyle Murray and that guy.
I totally agree. The only reason that I know that it's Richard Reel. The jump to conclusions, Matt.
Yeah, yeah.
Is because I had to look it up because he has played like he's played like Wilford Brimley in this scene, right? Like he's played like he is 500 years old and impossibly. And that's because literally everybody else in this show is 25 or meant to be 25. I looked it up. He's 49 at the time of this, right? Like, so, you know, a couple of years younger than No Illusions, right? Like it's.
Yeah, no, he's great though. And he's this total usual. Creep. And so what happens here's you can do some more legal commentary now finally and then that'll be pretty much it for the most of the show. he grabs her butt. He's so into Calista Flockhart. He grabs her butt and she complains, obviously, and she's like, this guy sexually harassed me and sexually assaulted me, but he's such a good lawyer that he claims under federal disabilities he has OCD, and it's this condition where he sees a butt and he has to squeeze it. So because he's such a good lawyer, the firm is scared of him. And so they decide they'd rather fire her and risk her not being able to really do anything rather than fire him and face the legal consequences there. So what do you think about that that legal bit of
So first, I want to start off with one of the moments that legitimately made me chuckle in watching this was his initial reaction, because I think Richard Reel just extempt this because he goes up, he grabs Calista Flockhart's butt while she's on the ladder getting books from the firm library. Mm-hmm. And then she turns around and throws a reporter at him. And he says, I have Epstein-Barr. And Epstein-Barr, right, that's not OCD. Epstein-Barr is the virus that causes mononucleosis, right? So it's this complete, like, hilarious, you know, so he's making stuff up. And I laughed at that. There is no such thing as the Federal Disabilities Act. You will not be surprised to know that. in terms of evaluating the law, obviously Calista Flockhart has an absolutely bulletproof case here,
right?
Because in addition to the grabbing the buttocks, which occurs, it's set up with five or six previous incidents of him, you know, walking by and just creeping on her, right? And, you know, brushing against her, letting his hand wander. It just horrible, not appropriate office stuff.
But how beyond, you know, how much of a stretch is it to say that a person in position of power in a law firm might get away with something like this in the 1997?
Well, and that's the flip side, right? If you take out the legal stuff, right? Because they filmed two scenes, right? Like first they filmed a scene where they go through the legal analysis and they say, well, he's got this claim under the, and then,
yeah, that's stupid.
Then they filmed the scene that they should have just cut to, right? Which is Calista Flockhart standing in the senior partner's office going, you could very easily prove, you know, that this is sexual. And then she says, you don't want to because you value him more than you value
you're
me.
Right. They should have just stuck to that.
That's 100% true. I mean, that is, right. Like I've talked about how my opening, you know, my first year class at Covington, there were 36 of us. And by the time I left, there were only three people left at the firm. Big firms chew up and spit out Ivy League grads and they don't care. And so, yeah, if this was a huge rainmaking partner, 100%, it would be the case that the firm would cover that up. And I guess, I mean, this is sort of my, like, it was hard to figure out, like, the show was kind of going for comedy, but kind of going for drama. And I guess they wanted to sort of show the lighter side of sexual harassment here or something. I don't know. But it kind of felt like they could have made that a serious
thing. No, you're right.
Thing.
That would have been better. That would have been a much better thing to just do. Now, what happens next? So she either quits or is fired. It actually says both. I'm not even sure which. But,
again, two scene theory is prevails here.
But you got to love this show because it does a call out to opening arguments because she says there's so much opening arguments here. She says, so I remembered that fool for a client rule. Yeah. So I retained independent counsel.
I have that note down too. This is great. We have the exact same notes.
It does get ridiculous here where they do the jokey side of sexual harassment, which is then, you know, the jump to conclusions, Matt guy jumps to grabbing everyone's butts to try to reinforce that he has some disorder that's going to protect him. So he's grabbing everyone's butts at the law firm. And she leaves, and just as she's quitting and all that, as we said, she runs into an old classmate, and he has started his own practice, and he wants her to join.
Yeah, I have this scene marked as Ned Ryerson. She just like walks out of the firm and bumps into her old classmate, who then I have to refer to as Jewy McJewerson from here on out. And like, boy, is he scripted like right out of the like anti-Semitic playbook. Like he's like the flashbook.
I don't feel comfortable making those jokes without Eli here to make them. So we'll just. We'll just cut to some footage of Eli making those jokes. Yeah.
The flashback is this guy who has a very, very nasal Jewish accent and stammers and like traditional Jewish mannerisms, like the best professor I ever had, Andy Altman. But they kind of flashback to him and Calista Flockhart at Harvard with him saying, I want to go into the law to make piles and piles of money, just piles of money, just bring out the money. And you're like, okay, like this is really straight out of a chick tract. So anyway.
Yeah, this guy cracks me up though.
he's
some
great,
good lines later. Yeah. And then she goes, she's going to work at the new firm. And this is where we meet Jane Krakowski, who I did not know was in the show. Oh, I love this. Is my new favorite show. Matlock is my dad, and this is the show we're going to watch together because I love Jane Krakowski. I imagine that you haven't watched 30 Rock, but she's just absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, I've seen 30 Rock, and Jane Krakowski is great. So we're
good. So we agree this show is great. Okay, yeah. We've all agreed. So it's this is where you can maybe comment some more on the law. She just jumps right in. But I'm wondering. I know there's a lot of stuff wrong with this, but if this were a small firm that somebody just started, you always do the thing, which is like, yeah, you're right out of law school. You don't do shit. You go, you know, do a boring research in a basement somewhere with no light. But for a tiny firm like this that someone just started, is it more plausible that she would be doing some sort of actual work or still too inexperienced?
It's more plausible that you would be doing more interesting work than at the big firm. But as like the firm kind of has to balance between bringing in all these corporate clients. So one of the things I really, really like about the show from a laud, awful, laud, reliable perspective is, right, Dewey McDewerson's job is to be the rainmaker, right? Like he's self-effacing. He's like, yeah, I don't even understand any of this law stuff. I just like to sit in and bring in the clients who have money, which totally realistic, totally what every firm needs. But the flip side of that is it is highly unlikely that you can bring in clients with nine-figure cases and be like, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to let this 26-year-old go and argue the motion. That cool with you?
A year ago, she was wearing denim jean jacket and frizzy hair.
Yeah.
And this is where we get the big reveal that I'm sure just shocked the pants off of you. Billy, the ex-boyfriend, her love of her life,
Robert Urich,
works at the firm. Da da da. He works there.
And we get the conceit for the show. I think this is the first time we've seen.
I was going to say, this is the first time we cut away to some 90s clip art.
Yeah.
because she imagines a wrecking ball falling on her because that's how she feels right now. And that does start this theme of illustrating in a sort of an abstract way, I guess, what she feels.
I like your definition of sort of abstract. She says, yeah, that's the way the ball bounces, and then a giant ball falls on her. Yeah. That doesn't require too much imagination.
It's more on the nose is what you're saying. It only happens like, you know, five times. So
in the next scene. Yeah.
Yeah. So Richard, which is the guy you're saying is a Jewish stereotype, he comes into she has to run away. She's just distraught by this. And they have like a meeting in the bathroom because it's apparently a unisex bathroom. That would make me uncomfortable in the office place if everybody's, you know, shitting together. That would be a weird thing for me. But
yeah,
but,
hey, and that was a big thing in the show. Like I am aware, the reason I make the Ally McBeal cultural references is because, I mean, this really was a cultural phenomenon at the time, right? Like brought out a lot of issues. I'm sorry?
Still a cultural phenomenon to you right now.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. At the time, which is now. no, but there were discussions about, was this show anti-feminist, given Calista Flockhart's character. And one of the main topics was the show's unisex bathroom. And so by unisex bathroom, here's what we mean. The lobby of the bathroom, right, with the sinks is open to both sex. And then there are stalls that you go in and shut the door. So not like any unisex bathroom we have now, right, which we don't need to explain to our viewers how bathrooms work. it is a little bit... I don't know how to feel.
Well,
about
this is the thing I've talked about a million times on Shoosh, that European people will tell me that American bathrooms are insane, because the reason a unisex bathroom would be uncomfortable to me if you're, you know, having to do your number two is there's no privacy. It's just these tiny paper, newspaper, cardboard thickness stalls. European people are like, yeah, they have like bunkers that they go like everywhere they get to go to the bathroom is a stall that the guy in the Twilight Zone went into, you know, when the nuclear bomb went off and he came out and then he finally had time to read. It's like that. Like all of their stalls are that. And so, yeah, if that's what it was.
By the way, that's the best off the cuff reference relating to bathrooms that I have ever heard. That's unbelievable.
If that's what your stalls are like, yeah, sure. Unisex is fine. I don't care about that. But the way it is like these tiny, no privacy stalls whatsoever in an office situation. It's just like a little weird. But anyway, yeah, we're doing too much on this bathroom.
Okay. Well, but there is one thing I want to say that kind of pisses me off is because Allie looks at Dewey McDewerson and is like, who's your best? Because now she says, okay, you're going to take over my litigation against the jump to conclusions, Matt guy. And who's your best litigator? And he says, well, Billy's my best litigator. And there is no way, because that's the other dude who's 25. They went to school. There's no way Ally McBeal isn't a better litigator than Billy, right? Like they're in the same class. They're the same year. And she was on Law Review and he wasn't. And neither one of them have been practicing law long enough to be any good at it. So, yeah, that just annoyed me a little
bit. It makes no sense. Unless somehow like they're not right out of law school. Maybe there's more time. I don't know, but it doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, Billy's the best litigator and he's going to help on the sexual harassment suit. So now there's a brief scene in her apartment. She has a roommate who we'll get to know more later on in the series, I'm sure.
Sassy black friend.
Yeah. And then we get
Oh no.
Her roommate's calling her out for the fact that she has to get up like 30 minutes earlier every morning now because she wants to impress her ex-boyfriend at the office. And then we get what I'm sure was your favorite 90s CGI clip art imaginings, which was she's imagining her boobs are bigger and then her boobs get all much bigger and
it
hilarity ensues.
I want to just give, because our audience, we have a diverse audience of both age and background and everything else. I just want to say for our younger listeners, this is what the world was like before you had unlimited porn on your phone, okay? You had to wait in order for a show that came on the Fox network and aired in prime time to have a 3-minute scene with Calista Flockhart in a bra for no reason, right? Like that was it. That was how, if you were a teenager or in your early 20s in the 1990s, like that was how you made it through the 1990s. So this ends that public service message. This is fan service, right? Like this is just
But I actually thought it was kind of funny, the premise of you're getting up earlier and earlier to like doll yourself up because the ex-boyfriend works at the firm now. I thought it was funny, but you're right. It's mainly for the bra scene. It's mainly to have that be in the previews or in the pilot episode to get people hooked.
And
that was some action back in the 90s.
It sure was. And it is kind of I mean, it's not the slightest bit erotic, I have to say, like, because you are taking 63-pound Calista Flockhart, who is, rail Kate Moss level thin, and then inflating her chest. It looks weird. So.
Yep. And so then, oh my gosh, my next note, I don't know if I missed anything, but next note is another bit of... what's the word you would call it? I was going to say abstract, but what is the word for when that they're just whatever she's imagining, it kind of shows a cartoonish representation of. And the next one I have is when at work that day, Billy, the ex, asks her to coffee and she imagines them in a giant coffee cup having sex. I thought it was funny. It's a good show.
No, great I'm with show. You. I'm with it. You. That was a good little cutaway.
She's like, sure.
Have you ever seen the literal version video channel?
No.
Yeah. So what it is, I think it's one of these, like it was a meme or a thing like 5 years ago. So I'm just getting around to it now.
Oh yeah, probably. 20 years ago. But
yeah, right. What they do is they take like those ridiculously over the top 80s videos and then they have talented people re-sing the songs, but while describing what's happening in the video. And there's the one for Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart is just amazing. It's hilarious. And so anyway, every time I saw those clips, I was thinking about its literal video version. So
anyway. Okay. Well, it's that. And then we find out though that dump, 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 Billy is married.
Yep.
Wouldn't you know it? It couldn't just all work out and they get together or something because he's married already. So again, a lot happened in that like year that he... Yeah, so the timeline is unclear, but anyway, he's married.
Michigan,
he's married,
I like to
and
think
he's
Michigan
the best litigator.
Some sort of wormhole that you go through. He ages 15 years while he goes through it. That's it. But
he looks so much older than she does.
Yeah.
So she's working. Then we cut. She's in the courtroom, and here we go. Some more law for you. She's working some sort of libel case where a magazine published some salacious accusations or something about a priest.
Yeah.
And the judge, this is where we get the good old, the judge just says, well, you're right, but I don't like you. And I don't like, I don't like the ability for this magazine to smear a priest. So I'm going to rule against you and you can appeal.
So You skipped over a line that I am going to submit for at 175 for our intro quotes, which is Joey McJewerson wooing a client, cutting away. And the line is him saying, "I didn't become a lawyer because I like the law. The law sucks. It's boring, but it can also be used as a weapon." So
yeah,
I really like that line. Anyway,
Well, they're, that's just a little scene where they're portraying like he does. He just says whatever he can to get whatever, you know, can do to get clients. And so there's one scene where he's being all like sensitive and compassionate toward a client, and because it's like an older woman. And then when it's some man that, again, is, looks like a stereotype, he just talks about how he can use the law to do revenge and like ruin the other person and stuff. So that's established. His character is kind of this amoral. He's going to say whatever he wants just to get the client.
Right, right. And that's where we learn that Robert Urich has clerked for Souter, right? So Supreme Court clerk. And he says that his wife works for Steptoe, which is a reference to Steptoe and Johnson, which is another Covington-style firm. So again, more real law points for the background. They're just things
there you
that,
go.
You know.
But what do you think about this? Didn't we have this happen in something else where the judge is just like,
yeah,
I'm going to rule against you and you can appeal. I'm blanking on what that was. What was that?
I don't remember the movie, but like it is kind of a trope, and movies seem to forget that like when judges rule from the bench, that shit is recorded and transcribed, right?
Right.
So like when the judge says you're 100% right on the law, yeah, I'm going to rule against you. Go ahead and appeal this and you will get me reversed. You would not. A judge would not say that from the
not very professional
from the bench. Also remember, like, the primary thing that any trial court judge wants to not have happen is to be reversed on appeal, right? Like, reversal rates are used they're used politically to determine, you know, whether a judge is fit to be promoted up the ladder, right? So this judge very clearly, like, you don't serve as a trial court judge if you don't think you could be an appellate court judge. And so, yeah, it wouldn't happen.
But she's kind of feeling defeated because, yeah, well, she was defeated. And then back at the this is another funny thing, is she's not only working on this case and her sexual harassment case, this is all on like day two of her job, but yeah, she also had, the guy says, like, brush up on your tax law. Right. Over and over. And he's making a big deal about tax law for this new client.
Yeah. And I do have a note, though, that this scene where they're debriefing her back. So she walks back and she, like, you know, shoves a guy out of the way on her walk back. Like, it's yeah, it's a real, like, that dejected moment. Like, that's when I've lost motions, like, I want to shove people, too. So I was with Ally McBeal. So this show is great, is what I'm saying.
Yep. Yeah. OK. And good. Then, glad we finally agree.
And then she gets back to the office and the senior partner, again, who's 25 and was in the same law school class as her, but whatever, the senior partner is dressing her down like, hey, we gave this to you. And this is, I thought, totally realistic, right? Like, you wouldn't be doing this on your first day. Like, it's my first day. But I could see if you had a big client, right? Like, this, we should say a little bit about this argument, right? Like, the argument is their client is a magazine that's published the salacious details that you talked about. We just talked about on the main show what it takes to get prior restraint, which is essentially nothing. Like, you cannot get prior restraint. You cannot get an injunction preventing a magazine from publishing something except under the most extreme circumstances. So I could kind of see a firm, you know, assuming she'd been there for 6 months, saying,
like, how in the world did you bungle this one?
Nobody saying to the client, like, look, we're going to let our associate handle this because a trained monkey could do this. And
right,
let's let her argue in court. Like, you can't possibly lose. The law is 100% on your side. And then to walk back and be like, yeah, you know that case that I couldn't lose? I just lost it.
Right.
Well,
if you have the quote of the judge saying, you're right, but I'm ruling against you, I don't know, that would be good evidence. But
you
anyway,
would, by the so way, call. Like, you can call because you don't always get the transcript at motions hearings in state court. But it's all recorded, so you would call and be like, hey, I'd like to order the transcript from such and such a hearing in such and such a case at this particular time, because it's said in open court. So, yeah.
So, but there's another client, I guess, a tax client that they're going to try to win, and it keeps getting referenced over and over, like, you know, tax law, make sure they're going to pay fewer, less taxes and all that.
Right.
But she's working
late.
She's
an expert in everything. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. She just has to know all the different law of everything because it's, you know, she's just out of law school and it's a small firm. She's got to do everything.
Yeah.
So she's working late and ex-Billy comes over to talk. And then, wouldn't you know it, Billy's wife comes by and she's a lawyer as well. Everybody's lawyers.
And the wife, we need to say, Courtney Thorne Smith, fresh off of Melrose Place. And as I remember her from summer school, and she is just perfect 90s hot in this show. Like, it is just, you know, bleach blonde kind of. She looks like she should be married. You know, she should be John McCain's fourth wife, right? She is every Republican's dream woman. And and she comes in here to put Ally McBeal in her place. By the way, another slightly unrealistic thing about this, as you set up the scene, right, it's supposed to be Ally McBeal is working late into the night. Mm-hmm. And then when Courtney Thorne Smith comes in, you know, she kisses Billy and is like, you got to hurry or we're not going to make our 7 p.m. dinner reservations. So, you know, so this is like 6. And I got to tell you, like, 6 is you're just getting started at a big firm. Then the next scene I have listed in my notes as, I thought this was going to be another montage, but it's actually a dancing scene for no reason. But
going out, she's feeling dejected and her roommate needs to take her out on the town for some fun times and weird dancey people, because there's a whole bunch of, I think this is where they thought, like, we need some comedy, guys, like, what's funny? Well, people dancing really badly and then for some reason some twins, like these weird dudes who are wearing the same exact outfit and dancing in sync.
So
why are they there? No idea.
So we get new Ally McBeal haircut, right? It's kind of like swept up on her head, and it was like hard for me to recognize her at first, but
I didn't notice that.
Well, there we go. And then, but my favorite part about this scene is it's Ally and sassy black roommate like making fun of the guys dancing on the floor, but they're mm-hmm. dancing almost as terribly.
Yeah, right? They just like, look better.
Yeah, like the dancing is atrocious all the way around. But.
Probably because it's some shitty 80s sounding music that they have to dance to.
It is definitely. We could run another clip. Like there's no doubt in my mind I'm winning this poll. This is not 80s music.
Yeah.
This is
okay. I don't remember the music for this one, so you're probably right. but that intro song, damn it, that sounds 80s to me. Okay, anyway. We gotta wait the results. We gotta let the people decide.
Yes.
So later on, the woman whose name you know from stuff, I guess, because you're older than me, Courtney Thorne Smith. Billy's wife, current wife, comes by the apartment to talk.
Yeah, what time is this supposed to be? Is this after they've been dancing? Yeah. So is it like at 1 a.m, or I couldn't figure
Could be the next day. I don't know. The timeline is, it's a sitcom, whatever.
There you go.
Well, is it a sitcom? What is this?
I don't know.
It's like it's 45 minutes. It's a full hour show.
Yeah. Bygones podcast. Tell us what kind of show this is.
And she's there to talk. And she says that Billy told her that Calista and Billy had just gone on a few dates. So he's very much undersold the whole thing. He's been very casual. Oh, yeah. You know, we might have dated a little bit.
Yeah. They did no mention of, we used to sniff each other's butts when we were eight.
Yeah. You don't tell that to your current wife about it. You know, I'm siding a little bit with Billy on this one. Like, you don't want to make a big thing. Yeah. When your wife asks, who's that beautiful petite blonde? Do you know her? oh yeah, we sniffed each other's butts and we were madly in love for all of our lives. Probably still in love. No, you go, oh yeah, we, you know, dated. You don't want to, come on.
All right.
It's one there of those white
Lydia,
lies.
Lydia, are you listening? So probably.
You protect the relationship. Yeah.
Everything
she
Thomas
can assume
has
I've sniffed
you.
Everyone's butts. Anytime there's ever a girl I know, she'll just assume that I'm actually hiding it. And we sniff butts as kids.
Hey, at least your wife listens to your shows.
Ooh.
I can make that crack because she doesn't listen to the show. So
I'm not sure if Lydia listens to this. We'll see. She listens to some number of my shows, but I put out a lot of shows. So
yeah, wow, that's true.
That's, you know, there's a lot.
And then we have the Allie and Georgia read the stage directions to each other. I thought that was kind of interesting. She was like,
"What do you mean?
I really hate you right now." And Allie's like, "I really hate you too right now." Like it was weird.
Right. It's kind of they're fighting. They think they shouldn't hate each other because it's not the evolved thing to do. But then they kind of admit it to each other, like, "Ah, God, I just good old fashioned hate that person," and they kind of bond over it. It's kind of funny.
I just have David E. Kelly goes to the tell don't show school of writing, but.
So the next thing then we have deposition on the jump to conclusions, Matt guy. And he's representing himself. So it's just him,
which, by the way, is enough. It's all you need to know to disprove the insinuation made throughout this show that he is a genius lawyer. Like, he is obviously not.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait for some legal commentary on this, because they're asking him, when did you become aware of your condition? You know, the fake OCD that caused him to grab butts. And he's like, well, it was right when the lawsuit happened. I was, you know, I was so embarrassed that I went and found out what it was. And then they do this thing. Now, how accurate is this? Where they go off the record and they're like, we're off the record. And then he's just like, admits to being horrible. Is that happened? Is that a thing that happens? He's like, yeah.
So here's the thing. The kernel of this is true that I really like about this is that the deposition is in a conference room at Allie McBeal's firm, and the only people in there are the parties, the lawyers, and the stenographer, right? So that's 100% realistic, and a lot of our lawed-awful movies get that wrong, and, you know, so props to them for knowing what a deposition is. You also can go off the record and confer with opposing counsel, and it is its thing. What makes this unrealistic is when you know that opposing counsel has engaged in a violation of the professional rules of conduct, right? You have an ethical duty to report that to the court. And so
you can't go off the record and be like, yeah, I murdered a guy.
Right.
And then there's no consequences.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, I actually had this happen in a case in which the lawyer was over technically parsing which line on a check was the bank account or not. Right. And so I was the associate, and the partner had, you know, cause you know, at the bottom of a check, you will have the routing number and then the account number.
Right.
And he had referred to it as the route, you know, he'd referred to the routing number as the account number. Right.
Gotcha.
And,
yeah.
And so she'd filed this pleading that said, well, we looked and there was nothing with account number, and then put down the routing number, right? And then knew that she was deliberately misinterpreting that. And I had to say in my affidavit, like, I put in things that were off the record, right? I said, you know, based on my interactions with opposing counsel, it is my impression that counsel in fact knew the appropriate account number. And they got sanctioned for it. So, So, you know, yeah, like there's a little, I give them a little bit of a pass for dramatic license here, because you do go off the record in depos. It isn't recorded. There isn't a judge in the room. But if somebody admitted to criminal or unethical behavior, you wouldn't just be able to smugly get away with it. But
gotcha.
I suppose you could say, you know, you could have had him say, like, well, if you called it, you know, Billy say, well, I'm going to get the judge on the line now, and have him say, I'm going to totally deny it, you know, whatever. So. I'll give him a pass.
Okay. Well, then they go back on the record, and Allie McBeal puts an insult on the record. She's like, I want the record to show that this, you know, something, this bald piece of shit or something.
I took the note because she says he's a fat, arrogant, overweight, Like, and I was like, you should be able to get more than two insults in without having to repeat your, he is fat, but you know, you know, you don't have to say it twice. That's just mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this because Billy takes her back to that unisex bathroom again, and he gives her a good mansplain on like how she needs to calm down. Yeah. And they, this scene actually cracked me up because they're, so they're having a bit of a fight in the bathroom. And she's like, you told, what's her name, that we went on a few dates. And, you know, she's justifiably upset about that characterization. And then he's like, what should I tell her, that, you know, we were in love forever and I still thought about you and all this stuff, you know. And then the guy, Richard, the guy in charge of the firm, just opens the stall door. And the guy's like, what? I checked under the stalls and there's no legs there. And he's like, oh, my back hurts, so I have to sit with my feet up.
There was definitely some lampshading of the trope, because every time the characters go into the unisex bathroom, and I imagine that this happens throughout the series, they look under the stalls to see if anyone's in there. And I,
and then he goes,
I laugh at
it. I love the Richard character. He makes me laugh quite a bit because he's like, hey, look, better me than someone who cares about other people's lives. He's like, I don't care.
I agree.
He's like, doesn't care about anything they're saying. I thought it was good.
The
show's good.
I will tell you, if you will permit me a little bit of law geekery here, they're on a break in a deposition. And so this actual fight would never take place. And not just because, not, you know, regardless of assuming that you are, you know, in Allie's position and this is all that's on your mind and you don't care that you're like fucking up the middle of a deposition to, you know, have it out personally. But the reason why you would never do that is because there's a rule in depositions when you take breaks, right? You can take breaks at any time, so long as there isn't a question pending. But what you can't do during the break as the lawyer defending a deposition is you can't coach your witness as to what to say. And so automatically, one of the questions that everybody asks when you come back from a deposition is, oh, what did you talk about with your lawyer during the break? And the conversation that they had is obviously not privileged because it's not seeking or, you know, it's not attorney-client work product, right? Like, it has nothing to do. So you would have to come back and then put on the record, like, well, we talked about, you know, how we used to sniff each other's butts.
That's weird. Yeah. What a weird thing. I never would have thought that.
There you go. That's my. There's your little law trivia bit. Now, it's reversed, right? Yeah. Because obviously, right, Allie is not the witness in the deposition, so no one's asking the questions.
Right,
but, you know,
right.
There's your...
No, that was very worthwhile nugget of knowledge there. I never would have thought that.
See, it's not just nonstop comedy. We get actual...
I was going to say, and we can agree that, you know, this show is great. So that's all... We all agree.
I would love to see a mashup of this show and Matlock. Merge them into one.
So then it's kind of weird because it turns out like Richard is also kind of using Allie McBeal in a kind of a sexist way, because she's like, oh, I need you. Or he says, I need you in on this meeting with a new client because, you know, one of them is a lesbian and the other one is a good dude. And, you know, he is kind of the same moral guy, but it gets a little weird there. And then she's like, no, I'm not going to do it. You know, like, come on.
It was also interspliced with her saying, I get really insecure in conference rooms talking to people. Like,
right.
Yeah, you know, I kind of get why there was serious discussion over Allie McBeal's character when the show was, but now, when the show was current.
Yeah. And then we cut to, she's now arguing her appeal for the magazine thing. And it looks like she's arguing against or in front of a 3-judge panel, perhaps.
Yep. That's another law fact they had, right? I bookmarked this scene with her intro, Allie's intro quote, which is, today is going to be a less bad day, right? And I was like, it is indeed, because apparently you've gotten an appeal to the appellate court in 24 hours when, you know, it would have taken at least a couple of weeks, even on an expedited basis. So, and this is where we get her wearing the ascot. So there you go with that.
Boy, all these fashion notes you've got, I didn't even notice, but that's just me. So she comes back to the firm, and you know what? I gotta be honest. I think that maybe the purpose of that last scene where Richard is trying to use her is a bit of a setup. It's a bit of a, to try to foreshadow and to try to misdirect us a bit. 'Cause we get, We come back. She comes back to the firm, and Richard is offering Jump to Conclusions Matt guy a job because he was so good in his OCD ass-grabbing defense that Richard is like, hey, I'm going to offer him twice the salary of over there, and, you guys can get along, right? And I actually kind of bought it. I was like, wow, is she getting screwed over again? Because, well, but the character of Richard, they've established that he doesn't give a shit. So, I kind of bought the whole thing. And then it turns out that they were just doing a whole secret-y thing to get Jump to Conclusions Matt guy to admit that he made up his disorder. And they're recording it. So how legal is that? How's that
Yeah, Massachusetts is a two-party consent state, so this is illegal. That tape wouldn't be admissible. And by the way, Richard and Allie would both be brought up on criminal charges. But other than that, and also this plot being so hackneyed that, I get the sense that, movies in the 1960s would be, while a bit dated, the trope of secretly recording the villain confessing.
Does that even work in a one-party state? Can you record? Was that work?
Yeah, in a one-party state, it does work. So you just have to convince your monologuing evil villains to do it in a one-party state. So if they had only taken his deposition in New York, then they would have been okay.
So it's not that far off. It's just the wrong state.
And
you're arguing like it's ridiculous, and it's like, okay, it would work in some number of states. It's just not that one. You just hate my shows.
But I love you, Thomas. So that's really all.
That's how they got him. So cool. They got that. And then now everybody, there's this weird scene where everyone in the show ends up in Ally McBeal's office. it's this very ridiculous thing where they're all are kind of bringing in their conversations and drama into her office at once. And then Jane Krakowski is I like this part though, because someone asked her what's going on? And she just summarizes everything. She's like, okay, well this guy, the ex-wife the wife thinks that this and the, their ex is it. So she summarizes the entire thing. It's great.
And it's kind of weird because throughout the show, they've been playing Jane Krakowski as a sort of an overbearing, self-centered secretary, right? There's a bit where Ally McBeal says, I imagine her head just expanding while she's talking about herself. But she's a great secretary.
I know. I was going to say the same thing. She gets such a mistreatment because she's just fucking awesome. She does everything. She knows everything that's going on. She's highly valuable.
And I have had, because nobody could be this good, but I have had really, really good secretary. It's the only thing I miss about being in private practice with somebody else having the fantastic secretaries that I have had in my life. But hey, you lost this, so I noted the appeal already, and I pulled the horn book and tabbed the pages that involved prior restraint. That
sounds awesome. They're very unfair to her. She's great.
She is amazing. Also, this is the first scene, I think, in which we get to see just how palatial Ally McBeal's office is. Because when she first goes into it, it kind of looks like it's, because it's L-shaped, right? So it looks like it's going to be this interior office, which, by the way, is what you get as an associate in any firm, right? You get an interior office. You do not get, this thing is 3,700 square feet with bay windows in the back. It's amazing. I would murder a hobo for this office right now. I'm not making this. And I pay for my own office, and it's at a,
So then I guess next is that finally they're going to try to get this client, this corporate client for less taxes. And the guy is still saying, what we all need to remember is less taxes. And this is really stupid. This is where I think the law, I don't know what you're going to say, but they're having this meeting about they're trying, again, they're trying to, they're trying to win this client over. And Ally McBeal just blurts out well, how about selective enforcement? And they're like, yeah, the IRS is only choosing to go after you guys because you're an airline and something, something. And we can prove that it's discrimination or something. Ugh. And then, of course, they cut to Celebration because her brilliant idea won the day.
Yeah.
So how does that sound?
Yeah, this entire scene made my head hurt. so they come in and you have, I mean, just everything about this is written incorrectly, right? Like, so the client, by the way, like the client, we the foreshadowing we got, right, where Ally McBeal was not happy to be used as a piece of meat in the boardroom, right? So Joey McJewerson says the client is going to be represented. The guy is kind of a horn dog, and the woman bats for the other team, so flirt with both of them, right? Like, that's what we were alluding to earlier. They're not played that way, yep, in this scene at all, right? Like, they're just totally, it's just two normal people in there. So I...
Yeah, that's what I'm, again, I think that was stuck in there as some weird way to throw it off and make his character seem worse, so that you would buy into the, I guess, right. It's kind of random.
That could be. That could be. That's. I'm willing to accept that as film as a way to make it.
But it still doesn't make any sense, because there's no reason that they need to sell it to that level, because they were alone during that. I'm not saying it makes sense, but I'm just trying to think of like why they did that scene, because there's no other real explanation for it. But
So the client says, "Why should we relocate to a state that's called Taxachusetts?" Right, which is not what
not relocate. They're saying, where should we bring the case, right? Where should we bring the lawsuit?
I guess, because it's not clear because they're trying to bring this client in, right? And so presumably they're shopping around for lawyers already in Boston. So I thought it was like advice about where to locate their headquarters. To be honest, I couldn't figure it out because none of it makes any sense. The only thing that matters, right? Like, federal tax liability is federal tax liability, regardless of where you're located. And the example that Billy uses that he's giving to narrate, right? So Billy is like, look, Massachusetts is going to rebel against their tax image because this was the state that even tried to, you know, tax professional athletes pro rata for their away games played here. And by the way, like, that's the law, right? Like, not a message, right? Like, states can't tax, right? Like, that's, you have to apportion your state income tax based on where you earn it. So if you've, So if you earn income in multiple jurisdictions, you've got a file in multiple jurisdictions. So,
even if you just play a game, so like you work.
I didn't know that. This is part of why professional baseball players don't do their own taxes. this was a rough scene.
It's really bad. Wouldn't you think she maybe would run her genius plan by some of the other partners?
No. You always let the 26-year-old associate just
blurt it out
whatever comes to mind in the middle of trying to woo clients in.
That's always good, best practice. But she wins the day, of course. Cut to celebration. I guess it closes because she ends up with Billy, her ex, together, and they kind of have a bit of a heart to heart. And she's like, they still love each other, but you know, they're going to still try to work in the same place together. And hence you're going to have a series.
And this is where we find out that it has been 2 days, right? Like, that's part of the toast. Like, Billy says,
"Oh really?
It's been a great 2 days for Ally." And I'm like, yeah, it's been a fantastic 2 days. Like, that's a year's worth of lawyering that she got in those 2 days.
So that's it. That's our show.
That's our show. We've missed my last two notes. We have literal head banging against the door when Billy leaves Allie's office,
she's hung up on him.
Yep. And then we have more music playing, which, you know, Miami Vice didn't have this much music playing over the movie. I want to end with a bit of trivia that I had to look up and discover. Did you know that 2 years into the show, Fox decided to make...
Okay, that's somebody I have the same thing.
All right, you can do it.
We have all the same notes. I was going to... Because I was looking up the actors, and you must have seen it the same way, where not only do they have Ally McBeal, but they also have Ally. Right. What they did was... And I knew nothing about this, but when you click on Ally, it's one season, and it says... Well, what they did was they took Ally McBeal, but they stripped out all the law parts and just had it, like, literally, that's what the show description says. Like, they got rid of all the law parts, brought in some deleted scenes of just Allie, what she's going through, and made a show out of it. So it's like they got rid of all the pesky legal drama and just turned it into her personal drama for a season, I guess.
Yep. No, that's so funny that we had the exact same notes. Yeah. They were like,
wow, we really were on the same page on this one. We both agree that it was 80s music in the intro and that this show was great.
I will say this. I am definitely going to watch another episode of Ally McBeal.
I like the show. Like, I'll be honest. I really enjoyed it. It's not, you know, obviously there's stupid things about it, but like, I would have thought it would be a little worse. I don't know. I never watched it, and I was surprised that it just is likable to me. It was just kind of enjoyable.
I want to figure out, right, how much, right? There's so many things that I can't quite figure out, right? So one thing I can't figure out is if Calista Flockhart is a genius of an actor or if she's just cast in this particular role, right? Like, because boy, does she do like completely overwhelmed, neurotic, like nervous, like it's amazing, right? Like, I totally believe it, but I mean, that just, she may just be overwhelmed and neurotic, like, at which point it's slightly less impressive. So I need to figure that out, and I need to figure out if the show is going to continue to like sort of wink about the law and be like, you don't really care about this law stuff. So, you know, because if it is, then, you know, you give it a little bit of a pass. Like,
it's not supposed to be law and order.
Right. And I agree with that, right? Like, what made The Firm the archetype for this, it's why we started with it, is that there's like 20 different lines in The Firm where the characters go back and forth and are like, but you can't violate your legal ethics. And, you know, and this thing that they've gotten wrong, you know, everybody delivers, you know, sort of breathlessly and dramatically. And there's definitely none of that in Ally McBeal. So there we go. Thoroughly 90s, definitely not 80s, thoroughly 90s. If this were called, you know, Boston Law 90210. I would not be surprised. But I had fun. I had a lot of fun watching this.
Yeah, good times. I loved it. And I'm so glad we covered. So catch it. I think it's on every Tuesday on Fox, right? Current show, Ally McBeal. Make sure you catch this one. I'm sure you can see the back episode somewhere and then get caught up, because I'm guessing that, you know, the new season will start any time.
It's a fall show. Everybody knows it's a fall show. Come on. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much. I hope you enjoyed this, patrons, as much as we enjoy delivering it to you each month. And sorry we punked you, but you deserved it for recommending we do. For recommending we do a fine 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, or it should be anyway, movie in My Cousin Vinny. There's nothing to make fun of. It's a perfect, movie. Yeah. So. You deserved it. Anyway, we'll see you next month or whenever you listen to us.
Until then.